Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm Rose, and Kathy is here with me in the studio. And the title of today's show is Preserving Liberty for Future Generations. And I'm so excited. Our guest is William Estrada. He is a member of the California Bar Association and the director of Federal Relations for Homeschool Legal Defense Association. He represents us, the homeschooling family, by testifying before Congress and meeting with senior officials from federal agencies and the executive branch. In October 2007, Mr. Estrada took over as director of Generation Joshua. This is a division of HSLDA, and he works with young people who are passionate about making a difference in politics. Will and his wife, Rachel, also a homeschool graduate as well as an accomplished artist, reside in Northern Virginia. Mr. Estrada, welcome to Homeschool Companion.
Thank you, Rose and Kathy.
As I was looking at your bio and website, and there's two websites I'd like you to pay attention to. The website for HSLDA is www.hslda.org, and the website for Generation Joshua is generationjoshua.org, and you can check those out while you're listening to us. You know, I had mentioned in the introduction that you are the director of Generation Joshua, and I want you to describe to us, what is Generation Joshua?
That is a great question, and essentially we are the youth division here at HSLDA, at the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. The mission of Generation Joshua is to help parents and young people understand the role that young people can play as citizens and future leaders in our country. Kind of our byline is Citizenship for Youth, and through three different programs in Generation Joshua, we seek to inspire and educate young people to get involved. We have online civics courses where they learn about our founding, they learn about our government, and they learn how citizens can make a difference. We have training activities. We have an annual summer leadership camp where hundreds of young people from all across the nation come, and they role play actually for a week as members of Congress, as running a presidential election, as members of the Supreme Court, dealing with foreign policy and domestic policy. It's a really, really exciting summer camp. And then also the third aspect with Generation Joshua is hands-on instruction. We have opportunities for young people to volunteer to work on campaigns in the last couple days of an election. Also, our members in Generation Joshua form local clubs. They sometimes lobby their elected officials. It's just a great, great national program we've got.
That sounds fantastic. What is the significance of the name Joshua?
We get that a lot. Generation Joshua is pretty much named for, in the Old Testament, the book of the Bible, the book of Joshua. You had the, we'll call it the Moses generation, and they were the pioneers. They came out of Egypt, but they made a lot of mistakes. They not very many of them made it into the Promised Land. But then the next generation, they were the young people who had seen the miracles that God had done in taking the Israelites out of Egypt. And so they were the next generation who went on in and who, in the words of Joshua, they had to stay strong and very courageous and follow God's commands. And so we're just kind of using that analogy as the next generation of young people, they're kind of like the Joshua generation, and they need to keep on standing up for what's right, being good leaders, being humble, being servant leaders, I love using that phrase, and see how they can get involved in our country.
What are some of the projects? You mentioned that you have local clubs, and students themselves get involved with helping to get the message out for whatever candidate that is being endorsed or that you think supports freedoms?
Exactly. Our political action committee at HSLDA, the HSLDA PAC, we endorse pro-homeschooling K-12 candidates, pro-family candidates, mm-hmm. and then we give opportunities to our Generation Joshua students to work on these campaigns. And kind of the neat thing, Rose and Kathy, is we, Generation Joshua is more of a Christian, I guess you could even say conservative, although we're a nonpartisan organization, means we don't mm-hmm. support just Republicans or just Democrats. We look for just good candidates who stand by our values. But we are open to any young person who wants to join. And so we have people from all of the political spectrum in Generation Joshua. And it's really interesting to see these young people all across the nation taking what they're learning and saying, wow, I may not be old enough to vote, but I can get involved on the issues that I care about. And they're doing that all across the nation. A specific exciting example was earlier this year, one of our clubs in Hawaii, it's about made up of about 65 Generation Joshua kids, and they got involved in actually lobbying their governor about a bill that was going through the legislature. And they met with the governor, they talked about these issues, and here are 14 and 16-year-olds learning how they can go and talk to elected officials. They can make a difference. They don't just have to sit at home playing their Game Boys and PlayStations. They can actually get on out into the real world and make a difference.
That's fantastic. Now, what can a young person who's listening today do if they want to get involved in Generation Joshua?
I would love to have them join. You can go to GenerationJoshua.org, our webpage, and sign up. We have a 2-year membership program. It's $35 for a teenager to join for 2 years. We also have family membership programs. We have discounts if your family is a member of HSLDA. But that's kind of the baseline right there. And you get to go to our summer camp. You get full access to our moderated forums and chat rooms where you get to meet other like-minded young people all across the nation. It's amazing some of the issues these kids are debating. I'm like, wow, these are deep policy issues that our Congress can't even figure out. And here are these young people talking about these issues and saying, we're not going to just settle for being kind of the stereotype of a teenager. We're going to make a difference and act mature and act our age and make a difference in our country, being good stewards of the nation that we've been blessed to live in.
And we were just kind of joking, was he any relation to, in fact, one of the students had said, are you related to a California state policeman? And I just didn't get it. I just didn't get it. But now I've gotten it. So I want to share with you the relationship between.
There is none.
Is there any relationship? Is there any relationship between you and Eric Estrada?
Yes, our listeners are probably very familiar with the Chips actor, Eric Estrada. And no, there's no relation. I don't even own a motorcycle.
Okay, well, now back to business at hand. I had a question for you. Tell us more about what you're doing to teach the young people about the political process through working on elections.
Well, one of the most exciting aspects of Generation Joshua is what we call our student action teams. And that's an opportunity where our members in Generation Joshua can go and travel all around the country to actually it's called GOTV work, get out the vote efforts, in the last 5 to 6 days of the election. So we are gearing up right now to deploy around 1,000 volunteers to elections, and to actually work doing door-to-door campaigning, phone banking for good pro-homeschooling, pro-family candidates all around the nation. All expenses are covered. The campaign will actually provide all of the food and lodging and rental vehicles. And we go there and our staff lead it. And we say this is our Republican form of democracy at its finest. You know, you may not always agree with your leaders, but I believe that we have a biblical duty to be good stewards of the country that we have. There are so many people all around the world who, when we look at Iraq or Afghanistan, mm-hmm. where people wait in line to vote, and they could be killed doing it by terrorists or something like that. And here, it's so sad to me that so many Americans don't vote, and they don't get involved in the electoral process. And we're trying to counter that by telling these young people, you can get out and you can make a difference. You may not yet be old enough to vote, but you can help out with phone banking and sign waving. And we seek to provide opportunities for them to get involved and to do this.
What have some of the past Generation Joshua students have been able to accomplish?
Here's a great example. There's a congressman from California. I think it's the 4th congressional district. I'm around the Sacramento area. His name is Tom McClintock. He's a good member of Congress, and he was running as a freshman in 2008, running for Congress. And 2008 was he's a Republican. It was not a good year for Republicans, no matter how you slice it. So he was endorsed by the HSLDA Political Action Committee, and he said, we would love to get a team of volunteers to come and work on our election and to help out. We fielded about 50 volunteers, and these young people in the last 5 days of the election, they were tireless. He actually wrote me an email afterwards, and he said, I would not be in Congress were it not for these volunteers.
Wow. Tom McCormack
won by about 2,400 votes, and he said these young people, they contacted over 50,000 voters. This team of 50 in 5 days, they contacted over 50,000 voters, and he said that was the margin of victory. And you look at it. I mean, when you go to the polls, for example, the people who are standing out there are usually older, and that's great. But where are the young people? And when you have energetic, vibrant young people, it's what President Obama did in 2008. He was able to mobilize the young people to get out and to make a crucial, crucial difference in the election. And we're working on the same thing. We're saying just because you're young, it doesn't mean you can't be involved or you're a waste of time. You can get involved. You can understand the issues and make a difference. And we find that when our Generation Joshua volunteers get involved, they make a huge difference. And they learn a ton, too.
So how can they get involved? If someone's listening to the program right now, what could you tell them if they wanted to get involved in Generation Joshua?
Go to our webpage, www.generationjoshua.org. Click the join login. It's about $35 to join for a 2-year membership per student. If you're a member of HSLDA, you get a $10 discount. It's $25. And as a member, you'll immediately be able to sign up for our fall student action teams. You'll have opportunities to work on our civics and online courses, meet other young people on our forums and chat rooms. And one of our big draws also is our annual summer camps. And we actually have regional summer leadership camps where they'll be able to attend. We have one on the campus of Patrick Henry College in Northern Virginia. We have one out in Colorado Springs. We're actually trying to set one up for Hawaii next year. And these are just great camps where they learn about biblical principles. They learn about our country's founding. They learn about our laws and how they can make a difference, and just are really inspired to get involved in our country.
Now, Mr. Estrada, you're a member of the California Bar Association. At what point, this is kind of reverting back to how someone who's being homeschooled gets into law school?
It's a good question. And the exciting thing, I think I said in the beginning when my parents started homeschooling me, homeschooling was illegal still in many places. But now, because of the hard work and dedication of homeschoolers, and also because of the work of HSLDA, homeschoolers are able to get into colleges, law schools, universities all around the nation. I have friends who've graduated from Harvard School of Law and Yale. I went to a less well-known college. It wasn't an Ivy League law school, so I didn't have any problems getting in. But the trend is clear. Colleges are now actively looking for homeschoolers. I know people who got in on full tuition ride scholarships to Harvard because they had such great LSAT scores and they worked so hard in their undergrad in college. And we have seen a complete shift in the people's perceptions towards homeschooling.
Yeah.
It's now, wow, I know someone who was homeschooled. It's not homeschooling. How are you socialized? Which is what the question everyone was asked in the beginning.
That's right. One more question on this. I'm looking at your bio here, and it says that you have done some lobbying, and I wondered what issues would need to be lobbied at this point for homeschoolers.
I head up, in addition to running Generation Joshua, I also head up HSLDA's Federal Relations Department. So I'm on the Hill all the time. And despite the shift in attitudes towards homeschooling, there's still an attempt by many, both at the state and federal level, that we need to regulate homeschooling. And unfortunately, many times it comes from the teachers' unions, because they are threatened by the amazing academic success of homeschoolers. And as the public schools continue to, I think, waste time and fail in the education of children, more and more parents are saying, we're going to homeschool our children. We're going to personalize the education to what Johnny and Susie need to learn instead of just having a one-size-fits-all approach, which is so many times what happens in the public schools, despite the best efforts of many public school teachers. So as homeschooling continues to become more popular, people in the National Education Association, for example, they start saying, oh, we've got to crack down on homeschooling, and they reach out to their allies in Congress. So the lobbying in Washington, D.C. is all keep us, leave us alone at the federal level. There are laws. Each state has a different law governing homeschooling, but there's no federal control over education, and that's what we want to keep it at. There's no need for the federal government to get involved, and we do not want any federal involvement in homeschooling. We say no thanks. We don't need any assistance, but we also say no regulation as well. And it's a message that resounds with the members of Congress, and we've been successful in that due to our hard work and, again, the dedication of homeschoolers all around the nation. If you're interested, our listeners can go to hslda.org, and they can sign up for our e-alert system, and they would get updates if there's a bill in Congress that would regulate homeschooling, and we encourage people to sign up for those and to call Congress if the need arises.
Yeah, we had a town hall meeting with our congressman, and he said that something had come before. It had to do with what California was experiencing, where you had to be a certified teacher, and the same thing was coming up again. And he said they got so many calls from homeschoolers that it shut down the switchboard or whatever, however they do it there. And he said it does make a difference when people are actively involved.
Absolutely. And homeschoolers, he's referring to what was called the battle for H.R. 6. It was a while ago. It was 1994. But that was an attempt by Congress to require all teachers to be certified in the subject areas in which they teach. And the all teachers, we asked them to say this doesn't apply to homeschool teachers, but they refused to. So the clear intent of Congress would have been homeschool teachers, private school, public school teachers, they would have had to have been certified in every single subject area they taught. And for every single grade level. It would have been the death knell for homeschooling, would have hurt private schools and public schools, and millions of homeschoolers and our allies shut down the switchboards on Capitol Hill. And you know what? Members of Congress still remember that when I go in and lobby on Capitol Hill, and they understand that you've got to leave homeschoolers alone, or else they'll pick up the phone and they'll shut down the switchboard.
So why do you think parents have a constitutional right to homeschool their children?
Well, because of the way the Constitution was written. Our founders wrote the Constitution to protect the inalienable rights that all people are given by God. And so our founders said, that's the role of government. That's the role of the Constitution, to protect our God-given rights. We read in Scripture, you know, every parent has the right to direct the education and upbringing of their children. The government, the Constitution, is there to preserve our rights, not to give us any freedoms. And when you look at it that way, you see, wow, we do have the right to raise and educate, direct the education and upbringing of our children. The Supreme Court has stated that very clearly in a case that was called Pierce versus Society of Sisters, another case Wisconsin versus Yoder, and another case Meyer versus Nebraska. And that's the right that we fight for. And it's interesting, we see threats on the horizon. Maybe you've heard about the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, which is an international treaty. It's not been ratified by the U.S. Senate, but the Clinton administration signed it back in 1995, and that's a battle we're fighting now. We're also looking at the courts starting to rely on customary international law, and international law, which they're saying could trump our U.S. Constitution. And so one of the things we're working on right now is actually a parental rights amendment to the U.S. Constitution, one which would just set right up there in the Constitution that parents have the right to direct the education and upbringing of their children.
And there's two sides of that coin, because then the parents that are abusive, that they kind of put
when we worked to draft this, we put a second section in the parental rights amendment. And the second section, there's an Article 1, Article 2, and Article 3. In fact, to our listeners, I encourage you to visit another webpage. It's called parentalrights.org. to find out more information, to actually read the text. But the second section of the Parental Rights Amendment makes it clear that the government does have the right to get involved if the parents are abusing their children, if they're breaking the law or something like that. Because absolutely, if there was anything like that, then the courts and social services do have the need to get involved and to protect the child.
Now, you just touched on a little bit, but what do you think is the biggest threat to our freedom as homeschoolers?
I think it's twofold. I think it's the United Nations, and I think it's a judiciary that's no longer looking at our Constitution. And both of those are dangerous threats. The courts, I think many of our listeners are very aware of the fact that it seems like more and more the courts are trumping the democratic process. And our founders, I believe, established the judicial system to only be there to guard against the excesses of the majority. For example, if 95% of white people said, well, we want all blacks to continue to be slaves, then that would be the role of the, and a role the Supreme Court failed in the Dred Scott decision, which led to the Civil War, but that would be the role of the Supreme Court, to protect the rights of the minority against the excesses of a democracy. Our founders were very concerned about too much of a democracy. Threats of a UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, an international UN treaty, and the courts starting to rely on international law that could trump parental rights. That's why we're working on the Parental Rights Amendment, and it's the epic battle that's coming up to continue to ensure that homeschool freedom is there for generations to come. And then I guess the final thing I would say is starting to rely too much on our success. And it's easy for homeschoolers to say, oh, we're so much better than the public schools academically, but we can't let that be our lodestone. We need to continue to strive for academic success all over the nation, all over the world.
Now, the UN, you said the UN Rights of the Child...
The Convention on the Rights of the Child.
The Convention. The Convention.
It sounds like a great name.
It does. And you know, I'm so involved with orphans. Like, we're going to be helping to promote the organization. We do a lot of organizations that serve orphans. And so, the Convention on the Rights of the Child. That sounds like a great thing. Why is it a threat?
The threat gets when you comes up when you start digging into what exactly does the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child say. Obviously, our country should be a leader in standing up for the rights of children and also in making sure that foreign countries do that. No child labor, for example, or trafficking of children or of any person. And we have done that. Our country has been a leader on standing up for the freedom of children and other individuals all across the nation. We've got great laws domestically. The Convention on the Rights of the Child, however, has several concerning provisions. And the main one is that every decision regarding a child needs to be in the best interests of the child. And that the courts can get involved if there's ever a dispute between a parent and a child. And the courts would use the best interests of the child standard. That standard is currently only used when there's, most times, when there's been a divorce and one parent saying one thing, one parent saying another thing. So this treaty, if ratified by the Senate, would then allow the courts to step in any time a child disagrees with his or her parents. Johnny, you've got to come home at midnight. Well, I don't want to. I'm 15 years old, and I can make my own decisions. Johnny goes to the school social worker. The courts get involved, and then the court would weigh, is it in Johnny's best interest to come home at midnight? And that's actually what would happen. We've seen in other countries that have ratified this treaty that there's a UN body of nations, it's called the Committee on the Rights of the Child, that sits there and says, nope, you've got to change this law. In one country, they actually said that children could not be taught about Christian doctrine in the private schools. Mm. And these are the examples of what would come up if this treaty were ratified.
Seems like every good thing.
It's amazing. It's almost something we can't comprehend with the freedoms that we're so used to in our country. But I would encourage our listeners to go to parentalrights.org, and we've got the verbatim examples of some of the committee's decisions regarding countries which have ratified this treaty.
Explain a little bit more. We're coming to the conclusion of the show. Explain a little bit more to our listeners how they can be involved and how. Just tell us about it as we conclude the show here.
Well, thank you, Rose and Kathy. Again, I would encourage our listeners to check out GenerationJoshua.org, and you can find out our way of how we're inspiring young people to get involved and to make a difference in their country. You can find out about membership and how your young people, and we encourage families to get involved as well.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.